This episode is brought to you by Women's Health Collective Canada. WHCC brings resources, fundraising, and some of the brightest minds in science and healthcare together to address the gaps in women's health research. Follow them on socials at WHC Canada or visit whcc.ca to learn more.
Hello, and welcome back to the Rebel Mama Hotline. Today is the third and final installment of the Rebel Mama Health Kick Trilogy.
I can't believe it. How fast has this time gone?
It really has. Oh, but we've learned so much. Feel so much more equipped now for everything in my future. We learned about heart health with Colleen Norris. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, we recommend you do so after you tune into this one. That's season 3, episode 3.
And we explored the world of genetic breast and ovarian cancer screening with Joanne Katsopoulos, another must-listen for our female audience members. That would be season 3, episode 5.
And now here we are with a conversation we've been very excited for a while, and we have a feeling you will be too.
Yes, today we're covering one of the hottest topics in our community. No pun intended.
But really, it's intended.
But pun intended. It's menopause, guys.
Sexy, sexy.
So hot right now.
And once again, thanks to Women's Health Collective Canada, we get to do so with a resident expert.
That's right. Today, you're going to meet Dr. Nisha Yuksel, who is a professor of pharmacy and pharmaceutical sciences at the University of Alberta and the president of the board of directors of the Canadian Menopause Society. Her research program seeks to study aspects of women's health, including reproductive health and menopause, to enhance our understanding of women's perspectives and improve the quality of care for women.
Her research program also looks to translate knowledge through the development of evidence-based practice tools and resources in the areas of reproductive health, menopause, and osteoporosis to support women and healthcare providers.
Thank God for Dr. Yuksel. That's all I have to say.
Thank God.
This work is so needed. It is an honor to have you join us here on the Rebel Mama Hotline, Dr. Yuksel. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me to be here. It's my pleasure.
Oh, we can't wait to have this conversation because this is a very, very hot topic right now in our community.
It sure is. Yeah.
So maybe we just start with laying some basic groundwork with some vocabulary.
Yes.
So can you talk to us? Yeah, I think so. Can you talk to us about the difference between the terms perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So let's start with menopause. Menopause means end of periods, meno, period, pause, end. So that's really what that means. However, we diagnose menopause looking back. So 12 months without a period, then it's determined as menopause if you go through naturally. Postmenopause is any time after that 12 months. So once you hit menopause, then
it's over.
You're
that's
in post-menopause.
Forever.
Exactly.
Finally, you've been waiting since you were 13.
Yeah.
Right?
And then perimenopause is the time leading up to that final menstrual period and including that 1 year. So it's at the time of diagnosis of menopause, that's the perimenopause. And so perimenopause can, you know, occur anywhere from, you know, 4 years to 10 years before that final menstrual period. And that's where you're seeing a lot of the hormone fluctuations during that time and where a lot of symptoms do happen. And women can go through menopause naturally, as I mentioned. So basically, all really is the natural aging of the ovaries. So we have so many follicles we're born with, which they're the ones that produce estrogen and progesterone. And so they become less and less. And at menopause, they're not functioning. So we have a decline in estrogen and progesterone levels, which leads to a lot of the symptoms with postmenopause. But the perimenopause is the time leading up to that time of menopause, that last menstrual period.
And it's so long. It's so hard to, it's so hard to define it kind of or pinpoint it, whether you're going through it or not. Are these symptoms of perimenopause or am I just tired and stressed? Because that also weighs in too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's distinguishing between, you know, what types of symptoms you may experience because those hormone fluctuations or after the menopause, and understanding what those symptoms are so that you're able to kind of distinguish between. And there's some overlap with other symptoms, right? Like mood effects and other things. And we can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's our next question. What are the symptoms for perimenopause and menopause, and which are the most common? What are we looking for here?
So the most common symptoms are, you know, things that we think of. So what we call vasomotor, so hot flushes and night sweats. And, you know, I don't know if you know, but there's over 34 symptoms of menopause.
Oh, of course there is.
God.
More stuff to think about.
I know, and it's scary, but not everyone's going to experience all those symptoms.
Right.
So those are the most common symptoms, but because night sweats happen at night, they can affect sleep. Sleep mm-hmm. can be a big issue. 50% of individuals can have sleep issues during that time. And that could be like fragmented sleep, you know, when you wake up you know, 2 or 3 in the morning and your mind's going and you can't go back to sleep and you just, you know, it's hard to go back. So that fragmented sleep and the sleep quality is really affected as well. So sleep is a huge issue. And what happens when we don't sleep? We're tired and we're fatigued during the day. And, you know, it's this whole cycle of just being, you know, I'm always tired kind of thing, right?
It's so, like, well, you're never sleeping. You try to sleep, but you can't function. Yeah.
Right. I know you try to sleep and you can't sleep. And some of that is from, you know, the fragmented sleep from being woken up from night sweats, but also estrogen's important for that quality, that REM sleep as well. So there's a combination of things. Now, not all sleep issues are from menopause, but it can be quite a bit from that, or even during the perimenopause when those hormones are fluctuating. Other things include mood. Mood can be a big issue, especially things like anxiety and irritability mm-hmm. and depressive symptoms. And more common, we see this during the perimenopause than after menopause and postmenopause. So it's more common during the peri because those hormones are fluctuating.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, unstable, right? It's unpredictable. Other symptoms include things like thought, cognition. You know, we talk about brain fog.
Oh,
yeah, I don't know. God. Yeah, that fogginess. I can't think.
It's so real.
Like, oh my gosh, I can't remember something. Where did I put my keys? But then also I can't function. My brain just feels foggy. And so that also is more common during the perimenopause too, when those hormones are fluctuating. Other things that we have to be thinking about, and this is more common with post, as you know, as we age with postmenopause, is effects on what we call vaginal symptoms. Mm-hmm. So we call this genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which is quite a mouthful. GSM is for
short. I don't even know how you said that. If we had to say that, we'd be stumbling.
I know. It's quite a mouthful. But that's like vaginal dryness, painful intercourse. You can see frequent bladder infections during that time too. There could be changes like urinary incontinence and those types of things, and even like low libido. So those are common symptoms. They can start during the perimenopause, but they continue to get worse and they don't get better with post a lot of
time. Come on.
I mean,
really?
Not everybody has it, but it's quite common.
It's so hard to think about like how you move around the world. Like you go to work and you're still there for your kids and you're still dealing with all these other issues in your life. While all these
actual
symptoms, like actual
changes.
Physical symptoms, you're not sleeping, you're irritable, your moods are changing, and you can't control it, and you're still trying to apply yourself to life in a good way. Like, how are we supposed to do that? We're not supposed to do it,
I don't think.
And I don't want to scare everybody. It's not like it's going to affect everybody in a severe or bothersome way. Symptoms, especially like things like hot flushes and night sweats, it can occur in up to 80% of individuals. However, only 25% or so are going to be severe enough or bothersome enough that they're going to want to seek treatment. Most of us can, you know, deal with mild symptoms that we can, you know, look at lifestyle changes and some of the complementary therapies I can talk about. Mm-hmm. But there is hope for people who have very bothersome symptoms. And that's why understanding all those symptoms is so important, of what's going on in your body so that you can pinpoint exactly what's happening. One other thing I didn't talk about is, especially in perimenopause, is changes in your menstrual periods. So they can be very irregular. The only thing predictable about perimenopause is that it's unpredictable, right?
And so, stupid perimenopause.
So that's, I know. So it can be, periods can be like regular and you can have symptoms, or they can be very irregular. They can be more frequent. They can be heavier. They can be lighter, less frequent. It's all over the place until you have your final menstrual period.
And that can last for up to 10 years.
Well, not, you know what? It doesn't occur up to 10 years in everybody. Sure. So I just want to reassure you. Yes. I just want to let people know that sometimes even in people in their early 40s, if they start experiencing those symptoms, it could be from that. So they don't get worried that, oh my gosh, what is happening to me? Right. And so it's just recognizing that we're all individual. We're all going to have a different experience going through this. Some of us are going to have, you know, more mild symptoms. They may only occur closer to our final menstrual period, while others might start having it earlier and have more issues. Just recognize that, you know, it can be all over the place for different people. So it's a very individual experience.
Good times for women always. Let's take a moment to just appreciate what women go through with our menstrual cycle. Cause it's no joke. It's our whole lifetime almost.
It really is. And, you know, some women have more issues than others, but it's recognizing it. The unfortunate thing is we don't talk about it. We just don't talk about these issues, which is great. And thank you for doing it so that people realize that they're not alone. And I think it can be very isolating when you're having these symptoms and you feel really alone, that you're the only one experiencing that. No, there's other people that do experience it. I even see it from my own friends, right? Especially when we were all going through perimenopause. I'm in postmenopause now, but when we were going through perimenopause, and I still hear from my friends, and they really feel quite isolated sometimes with that. And it's just reassuring going, yeah, this can happen.
Let's just make it a normal conversation, just like anything else.
Yeah.
And even just bringing the guys into it and just putting it out there and having them learn about it and listen to it. It's important.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. One thing I didn't mention is individuals can also feel like the musculoskeletal types of pain. That can be very common as well, like joint pain.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's 34 symptoms you're finding. This is like this is the list.
34 or possibly more.
Yeah, at least 34.
And there's even things that people don't think of, like tingling tongue or burning tongue. Feet or burning tongue.
I've heard about the burning symptoms and like fingertips and toes and stuff like that.
Yeah, burning fingertips. Yeah. And we just, I mean, I don't think people realize that some of those are the symptoms of menopause.
So we want to switch gears and chat a bit about available treatments for menopause symptoms. But before we do that, let's pause for a word from our sponsor. This episode of the Rebel Mama Hotline is brought to you in partnership with Women's Health Collective Canada. WHCC was created by three of Canada's leading women's health and hospital foundations to break the barriers holding us back from providing women with the knowledge and care they deserve. WHCC brings resources, fundraising, and some of the brightest minds in science and healthcare together to address the wider gaps we can't tackle on our own. Learn more about who they are and what they do at whcc.ca or on Instagram at WHCCanada or through the monthly newsletter available through their website. Okay, so we understand that menopausal hormone therapy is the first line treatment for women suffering with symptoms of menopause. Can you walk us through what that looks like? How can someone go about getting a prescription? How's the drug administered? How long do people typically take them for? Like the whole lot.
Yeah,
what are we doing? What do we need to know? Help. SOS.
You know, that could be like an hour talk. Those are good questions. I love them. So let's start with what is menopausal hormone therapy. Menopausal hormone therapy is how we refer to it in Canada. MHT sometimes we'll refer to. I'll just call it hormone therapy just for ease. Sometimes it's referred to as hormone replacement therapy or HRT way. But in England, they still call it HRT. And in the US, they call it just hormone therapy. So there's different definitions with
it. Good to know.
When we talk about menopausal hormone therapy, we're talking about the use of estrogen and progesterone together if you still have your uterus, and estrogen alone if you don't have a uterus, if you've had a hysterectomy. And so the purpose of using estrogen and progesterone together is the estrogen helps with a lot of the symptoms. So if your hormones are fluctuating or you have low estrogen levels, those will help with a lot of the symptoms like the hot flushes, night sweats, sleep, you know, some of those mood effects, especially during perimenopause, and also will help prevent further bone loss. And one thing we didn't talk about is the effects on the bone, and we can come back to that. So it can help prevent some of those things. The progesterone is also really important too, is because if you used estrogen alone, what happens in the uterus is the lining starts to grow. So the progesterone helps prevent that uterus lining from developing. So it prevents endometrial cancer if used together. Mm-hmm. Progesterone may have some other benefits, especially micronized progesterone, which is the like the bioidentical type of progesterone, which you can get commercially, can also help with sleep too. So there's some advantages of it.
Okay.
And then estrogen alone would just be estrogen by itself for if you've had a hysterectomy. Now I can talk a little bit about different products because there's a lot of different ways and formulations. And luckily we have a lot of products,
which is so good. Yeah.
This is actually like such an exciting time for menopause.
I know there's a lot of awareness. Such an exciting time for menopause.
Such an exciting time.
It
menopause
is
so hot right now.
Because not only is there awareness on menopause and people are talking about it and finally the narrative is happening, but there's actually new drugs going to be coming out in the future. And I can mention them very, very quickly here too later.
Yes, please.
But one of the nice things is we do have quite a few products, and we have, for example, estrogen, we have oral products. We have what we call transdermal through the skin route, so patches and gels. So there's a few different types of formulations. We also have vaginal products, which are only for the vaginal symptoms. You don't get a lot of absorption into the body. So they're mainly just for vaginal symptoms. So if you don't want something and you you have to take orally or through the skin, and you only have vaginal dryness or those types of symptoms, then the vaginal estrogen is a really good option. And for progesterone, we do have a number of options too. We have oral products. We have combination products with estrogen and progestin. And we also have, we can also use the levonorgestrel intrauterine device that we use for contraception, right? But we can use it as a progestin as well, and it will help prevent that buildup of the lining. One thing I forgot to mention I just didn't get there, is the perimenopause. Some women during perimenopause will still need contraception. So that might be a good option for those that may still need contraception. So those are some of the types of products. How we choose amongst them, they do vary. And I can talk about it if you want to know, if you want to know how we kind of choose among the different products.
If you can maybe follow up with us with a list of products or what specifically they help with, then we can also include it in our show notes, and we can also share those things, like specific things.
Absolutely.
Like that would be great to share with our community so they have a place where they could find everything.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's a lot.
Yeah, there's quite a number of products. And one thing that I should mention is that the Canadian Menopause Society also has a list of products and information.
Great.
So I'll send a link.
That'd be amazing.
The other place is the Menopause Foundation of Canada is doing a lot of advocacy too. So I can send their link. And then there's another, the SOGC has their website, Menopause and You. So there's a few sites.
We'll take the links.
I will, to kind of give some resources for women out there. So
then what do you do? You're noticing that you have a combination of these symptoms. Like
you go to your doctor.
What do you, once you have a combination of like four or five, then maybe you should start thinking about talking to your healthcare provider about saying, I think I might be in perimenopause. These are my symptoms. You go to them and say, I've researched it and I think these are the ones
think
that
they would just look at your chart and be like, are you experiencing anything at this point in your
life?
And
then do they have to do like blood tests and hormone tests? Like, is there testing involved in that? Like, what's the protocol?
Yeah. So You know, I think it just depends on how bothersome they are for you. How much are they affecting your function and your daily function? Luckily, there are assessment tools that you can actually look online. Menopause Foundation of Canada, for example, has a menopause symptom sheet. So you could take a look at that, especially if you're noticing, geez, like I'm starting to really have a lot of night sweats. I'm waking up at night, or I just feel very foggy, for example, and I don't know what's going on. You could just download them and just write, you know, which symptoms you have. Do you have hot flushes?
Yeah, check them off.
So just check them off. And there's lots of resources like that. There's some apps like that as well. There's another really handy website that I will give a link as well. It was a colleague from the, she's on the board of directors, Dr. Goldstein's. It's a MQ6, it's called, and I'll give a link to that. But it's an algorithm to help individuals go through what kind of assessment they would need. It's for physicians and healthcare providers, but there's also information for women as well. And it'll be a really helpful, useful source. So I'll give that. So you can download those, take them to your family physician or primary care provider. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be a nurse practitioner as well who's dealing with working this area. So take it along with you and you can start going over the symptoms that you're experiencing. And really, it's just start the conversation. Even if you don't download them, just start. Just say, look, I'm having these issues. Could it be menopause related, right? Just start that conversation. Unfortunately, there's not like a real test for menopause. When somebody reaches postmenopause, we can do a follicle stimulating hormone or FSH. And if it's high, then it could indicate that you're in postmenopause. The problem with doing that level in perimenopause is the hormones are fluctuating.
Right. You don't know
so
what it is on
be,
the whatever
you can't
day.
Diagnose yeah. it with that, with the perimenopause. You can also do in post, you can do estrogen and progesterone levels. Sometimes some clinicians will do that, but it's not diagnostic. It's okay. not, they may do it for certain reasons, but it's not really diagnostic for that. During perimenopause, those hormones are fluctuating. You won't know. You won't know where they are supposed to be.
I guess just becoming aware and you know, in tune with yourself about those changes and really looking at how they have changed. Because also I feel like as busy women and moms and you have careers and all these things, like sometimes it does go on the back burner and you don't think about it as much. And just taking a moment to think about how your body's changing. I know I've been doing that and kind of paying attention.
Yeah. I think strategy wise, what I plan on doing is I'm going to go and go to your resources.
Yeah.
And I'm going to familiarize myself with the list so that if and when in the future any of these symptoms start to manifest, I'll be like, oh, boom, 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 boom.
She ready.
Like, that was all from the sheet. I'm prepared.
So
I'm going
good.
To the doctor. Like, I think that that's...
No, that's a great strategy, though. Just familiarize yourself with it and then you can be prepared for what comes next.
Yeah. That's the move.
That's the move. Two Virgos, of
Two
course.
Virgos.
Be organized and prepared.
Are you a Virgo, did you say?
Oh, both yes, of us, both
yeah.
of us.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Oh, both of you. So am I. Oh, my God. I get it.
Yeah, you get it. You're like, I too
understand,
like lists.
I understand.
From menopause to astrology.
Yeah, exactly. It all comes exactly. together. It all comes down to being a Virgo.
Yeah, but it's looking after yourself. So the first thing is being informed, mm-hmm. right? It's being informed of what you may be expecting, understanding these symptoms, how hormones play a part, and right, and then looking after yourself. And how is it affecting you?
I mean, I was never a great sleeper, but now I'm noticing that my sleep is just lighter and I'm waking up more often. And I definitely get the boob sweats more often. I didn't get that before. And yeah, I think I have an IUD. So, and I do get my period that like just very lightly. And I'm tracking that actually. My doctor was just like, just keep track of it. Like, just write it in your notes, like whenever day it comes and however long it lasts. So we know what it looks like. And that makes me feel better yeah. too. It's like,
it just feels good to be proactive about your healthcare. I feel like whether or not we can actually control anything, it just like, it feels good to us to be like, I'm in control.
Just add it
I
to the list.
My notes, put it on the list. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a really good comment about being proactive. I know in the menopause clinic where I had been working before with women is looking forward, capturing your symptoms as they happen, because it's really hard to remember looking back. I know, it's like, when was my last period, or when did I have those symptoms? But if you can record them, so like your menstrual periods, or, you know, I'm having a hot flush or night sweat. Oh, I didn't sleep as well. You know, all of these things, if you can record going forward,
that's a great idea. So I have a slightly more personal question.
We're here for it.
I have not taken hormonal contraceptives since I was 19. They just didn't agree with me. So has there been any correlation between women's experiences with menopausal symptoms and whether or not they've taken hormonal birth control their whole lives?
Do you mean like as far as side effects, or just in an issue
or
with
symptoms? Or does it contribute somehow?
Symptoms, does it come sooner? Does it come as soon as you stop taking the contraceptives? Like, I'm so curious.
And you know, one of the common questions that we get, and I get this when I teach my students, because I teach a course on sexual and reproductive health at the university, and I get this is like, does it, like having hormone contraception, does it delay menopause? Like, does it delay your menopause?
Or is there any effect?
And it doesn't, because, you know, and I try to explain this to the students, like we're born with a certain number of what we call follicles that are the ones that, you know, ovulate and all of that. And really over time, we start just losing our follicles just due to normal aging. It's not all from just ovulation. So by using hormone contraception, it doesn't really prevent that normal process from happening. So it doesn't delay it. What it may delay is you knowing that you're in menopause. That's the only thing, because the hormone contraception can actually help with those symptoms. And we actually recommend it as an option for women who are perimenopausal, who are having, you know, maybe heavy periods, or they have a lot of symptoms. So that's the only thing. And so what we recommend is that, you know, when you enter the average age of menopause, which is 51, then consider maybe that might be a time to look and coming off and seeing, especially if you don't need contraception anymore, because you won't know with your periods and all of that. So coming off and then seeing what happens, you know, from there. But you might still need contraception if you do need that at that time. So just keep that in mind. Right. But working with your family physician on that, and then seeing what happens. And then if you need using hormone therapy, if you're having symptoms, for example.
Right.
The one thing I do, and I'm a pharmacist, so I always ask what hormone contraceptions birth control pills you had been on before, because what I try to find out is if you've had any side effects with them, because if you've had certain side effects, especially with the progesterone, sometimes I find and that might be mood effects. Sometimes you may have issues when you use hormone therapy, but it doesn't mean that it will happen. We just will be more cautious and watch you, follow up, making sure you don't have that. So that's how I look at it.
Good to know.
Yeah. I had to get off because it turned me into a complete raging lunatic.
Me too. I was on birth control and it was terrible because my mood swings were out of control, and I didn't take to it well. So then we just did the pull up and pray method, and I have a child now.
Now she has a child. So everybody, we caution against that.
But I ended up getting the IUD after, not so much for that, just to regulate my period. And that's been great.
Yeah, no, it works really well. And that's actually the number one recommendation right now for contraception is the Lamergestrel IUDs, for sure, with that.
They just need to figure out like the pain management of putting that thing in.
Oh my God, like, that was what is that? Awful. Honestly, I have to say, because there's nothing that should be touching those internal parts of your body. And it's just like the weirdest feeling. And obviously we've felt pain and discomfort. We've both been in labor.
Yeah.
We're women. Yeah. So whatever. But that was like a special kind of discomfort. It was just so deep inside the body. Like, nobody should be like touching us in your uterus up there. Like, anyways,
anywho,
moving on.
There is preventative things for that too. So
there are.
Okay. Can help too.
Is it as bad when they take it out?
No, it's actually not too bad. I just wanted to mention one thing though. I don't want to scare people. If you did have issues with hormone, like birth control pills, doesn't mean you can't take hormone therapy at all. The doses of hormone therapy are so much less. They're like 5 four or five times less the potency. So it doesn't mean you're going to have an issue. What we may do is we would select a certain type of progesterone for you. That's how I would go about it. So I don't want you to think that just because you have, it's more of the type of symptoms or side effects you might have had and what we would do.
And you would just be more likely to monitor that patient a little bit more
absolutely.
Closely.
Absolutely. It means like we would follow up. Yeah. Like often we try to follow up in at least 3 months, but if there's something I'm concerned about, I might do like a phone follow-up at a month to see, you know, especially if with mood effects, it might just be like, okay, how are you doing? Or have them come in to the clinic.
Oh, if only all healthcare providers were like you.
Okay, so our next question is, are there safe hormone replacement options available to people experiencing surgically induced menopause? How about patients with breast cancer? And like, what does that look like for people that have gone through things like that?
Yeah. So we talked about the natural menopause, but you know, menopause can also be induced. So surgical menopause is the removal of both ovaries. So that is a surgical
When do you
menopause.
Do that? When do you induce that?
Under what circumstances?
Yeah, under what circumstances?
You know, if you've had endometriosis or endometrial cancer or severe, like there are certain situations like that, you know, sometimes they've done it for really, really, well, they might just do a hysterectomy, but depending on the situation, if they've had really, really heavy periods, that there's been some issue that they want to take the ovaries out at the same time. Sometimes it just depends on the situation, but you'll see it for a lot of cancer, right? Ovarian cancer, endometrial cancer, they'll take out the ovaries as well. So there's a number of situations that it would be. So the issue with a surgical menopause is that, especially depending on the age that the individual has, that they will go, a lot of times they'll go through more severe symptoms because it's dramatic, right? It's just,
yeah.
There you go. Estrogen and progesterone is gone.
Right.
And so it's pretty dramatic. So they try to start treatment relatively quickly after the surgical menopause with a hormone therapy. Usually if the uterus has been removed at the same time, so like a total hysterectomy with the uterus removed, then you just need to have estrogen alone, you know, in that situation.
Right. Because the progesterone you said was for the lining of the uterus.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And every so often they may give some progesterones for people maybe who had a lot of endometriosis, for example, they might give a little bit of progesterone. So it really depends on the individual situation.
But there is relief available, at least. Thank
There's
God.
Relief available. One thing I didn't talk about is the ages, right? Early menopause is considered before the age of 45. And premature menopause or premature ovarian insufficiency is before the age of 40. And so the issue with going into early or premature, so before the age of 45, so a surgical menopause, for example, at that time, is that normally we'd have estrogens there until the average age of menopause. And those estrogens are important for our bones and our heart. Mm. And if we go into early, we're not having that normal estrogen there. So it can affect things like resulting in osteoporosis later in life, heart disease later in life. So it's important for prevention, right? Cognition as well. So it's important for that. So that's why we would use it not just for symptoms, but, and the recommendation is to use it until the average age of menopause with that. So yeah, so that's sort of how we would do it. One thing I didn't mention is for hormone therapy, when we would consider it for natural menopause, and hormone therapy could be considered before the age of 60 and within the 10 years after the last menstrual period. After that, we tend to really decide if we want to use it at that point.
You keep going with it after your final period?
So to start hormone therapy, like in the natural menopause, to the natural.
After 60 is not recommended. Yeah. So we'll live our best lives when we're 61. I can't wait. Yeah.
And then within the first 10 years of your menopause, to start, that's what they would recommend, is that for people who have contraindications, for example, can't use hormone therapy, let's say they had breast cancer, or maybe, certain other types of cancer that they can't use hormone therapy. Luckily, we have options. We can use some non-hormonal medications, and they include things like certain antidepressants we use, gabapentin, you know, clonidine, oxybutynin. There's a few different options that we can consider for people who have more bothersome symptoms.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm so happy that there's treatment available and that people are coming back around to these hormone replacement therapies, because I feel like, you know, obviously we all read that New York Times op-ed that talked about how we totally like misconstrued those studies and it just went so far off the rails that so many women were just like, nope, I'm not doing anything. Yeah. Like, thank God we're coming back around to it. I feel like it's just at the right time for us to go through menopause.
I do. And luckily there's new medication too.
It's just going to get better and better. That's the thing.
In the next year or two,
there'll be some new medications coming out that actually addresses the why hot flushes happen. It's a neuron that gets overactive in our brain, and it's called a candy neuron. And when we don't have enough estrogen, it gets overactive and it causes our hot flushes. And there's new medications targeting that.
Oh my God.
Oh,
fascinating because finally we know what the physiology, so it's not just in our heads.
Oh my God. Finally, we're studying this. Hallelujah. Oh my God. Yeah, we're a little late to the party, but that's okay. So we interviewed your colleague, Dr. Sue Ross, last year. And in that interview, she was touting the benefits of community, having people to go through this phase of your life with, getting regular exercises.
Going for walks.
She recommended walking with friends. Can we talk
about that? It's so simple. I know. Like, it's something you can easily do.
So can we talk about additional complementary strategies or alternative medicines that can provide support for women on their menopause journeys?
Yeah, no, that sounds great. And Dr. S has done a lot on walking. Mm-hmm. And her and I have worked on a number of things. So really interesting work with the walking and exercise. In general, the complementary and life and alternative therapies. I'll talk a little bit about like what the guidelines say, the Canadian guidelines. And so, you know, lifestyle is important. So talked about walking, exercise, always really important. But thinking about other lifestyle things too, quitting smoking if you are a smoker. Smokers actually go into menopause a few years earlier and they have worse problems.
What?
They do.
Only on the weekends.
It's because
And in Europe. And in Mexico.
Yeah. So, you know, limiting alcohol intake,
Alex.
You know, you can still drink. It's just the amount, you know, like following, you know, Health Canada recommendations.
Yeah.
And, you know, just common sense things like, you know, dressing in, you know, in layers and the clothing that you have and avoiding triggers. And everyone's going to have a different trigger what that is.
There's actually sleepwear that's like heat repellent now or absorbs your sweat and
bamboo.
Stuff like that. So that's great too. There's lots of things on the market like that. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Absolutely. And I think there's more coming out like
for sure.
that. So really, really helpful. So those are some of the sort of lifestyle, yoga, even like stress reduction, all of the things.
Meditation.
But what's been shown actually for complementary and the most evidence for even hot flushes, sleep, some of those issues is cognitive behavioral therapy. And I know we talk a lot about cognitive behavioral therapy for many things, but it really has been shown to be effective and actually is really recommended as one of the first line for people who have maybe more mild symptoms or, you know, if you've had bothersome, it's in addition to other things that you may be doing. Also, mindfulness has been good. Other things, there's been mixed sort of evidence with like soy protein, you know, the plant estrogens, like soy protein. And then also like acupuncture, kind of mixed evidence. There's lots and lots of, you know, herbals, recommended natural health products, but a lot of them don't have the good evidence, don't have the good studies to say for sure.
Right. But that can be used in tandem with the pharmaceutical.
But I love
stuff,
the community
right?
aspect too.
I
just
know.
Like go out there with a friend and walk and talk about it and be there for each other. Like I think that's something so valuable and beneficial at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I do. And just being to be able to share, I think that's huge. And honestly, like also when you walk, it's not only that you're getting the benefit of walking, but there's data like about just walking and talking to someone, like you said, right? It does. That's where you can share things.
Yeah.
So it's the communities. And there's many more communities out there now too for menopause support. So
yeah,
it's just good.
Yeah, I know. We're trying to create one right now.
Oh, fantastic.
So we're going to speak about Sue Ross again. You recently co-authored a study about cannabis use among menopausal women. I think Sue Ross was on that study as well.
Yeah, she was one of the co-authors. Yeah.
So You didn't study the actual efficacy of cannabis for menopausal symptom relief, though we think that should be next and we can be your tributes.
We love cannabis. we'd happily be.
But you looked at the reality of cannabis use among women over the age of 35. So can you tell us some of the key takeaways from that study?
Yeah, thanks for asking. This was a study that we did. One of my master's student at the time, she's actually in second year medicine now, but she did a master's with me in the Faculty of Pharmacy. And so it was a study for that. And so what we did is we looked at we did a survey of women in Alberta, and we were looking at cannabis use for menopause symptoms. So we had close to 1,500 women who actually participated in the survey. So quite a large number.
They're like, yes, I will participate. Yeah.
And so basically we found that 34% of the group were current cannabis users, so in the last 30 days, and that 66% had used at some point in their lives. And a lot of the symptoms that they were using it for medical reasons really overlapped with menopause. So sleep, anxiety, calming, and musculoskeletal
sex
pain
too,
were the top
like
three, but there was
libido.
Other.
Oh yeah.
Some people did say they did use it for that as well, but the top three were the sleep and anxiety and musculoskeletal pain, like the joint pains.
Yeah. And CBD would be good for that.
You would think, but we don't know.
We'll just keep taking cannabis until we find out.
Yeah, but you know what? When there was such a long time where there wasn't any resources, or so of course you're like, I can't sleep. Like, okay, I'll have some of that joint. That'll knock me out, or whatever. I'll put some of this topical cream on my aching joints. Like, what do I have to lose? You know, but at least now we have, if you want to use cannabis, you know, we support you.
I mean, I'm just going to keep using it and find out later what it did. So far, it's doing a great job.
I think that's what we're trying to do, is bring awareness to say we need more studies to support women, right? And we also have a qualitative study where we actually interviewed women, which we are currently just writing it up now and hopefully we'll submit. And in there, they actually talked about why they were using cannabis for these reasons. And a lot of it had to do with lack of access to menopause care.
Right.
They just felt they weren't given that approach, like they didn't feel comfortable talking about it with their healthcare providers, or their healthcare providers didn't feel comfortable talking about it. So they started looking for their own solutions, right? And so that what was happening, they were doing it on their own. Only 22% actually got a medical prescription for it. So a lot of people were doing it by themselves. So one of the things we're trying to encourage is if you can work with a healthcare provider that knows and understands cannabis. I know they are available. It's harder to find, but there are clinics that do that. Mm-hmm. Definitely work with them because they're going to understand, you know, what's the evidence for sleep how much THC to CBD do you need?
Yes.
Cause it's, you know,
yeah, the ratio
and what
has
those
to be right.
It is cannabis is so available now in Canada, right? There's dispensaries everywhere. So it's almost like easier in a way to just walk into a dispensary and be like, I need something for sleep. And then you have a pleasurable experience with that rather than, you know, go in with all this overwhelming information and stuff like that with your doctor. But
I get it. Yeah. I totally get why women would go and do that. Like, that's what I would do.
Me too.
Oh, absolutely.
We're always like, can weed fix it first?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're looking for help. Yeah. Like you said, like you're looking to, you know, you need help, right?
And you want
you're
relief
for that, but maybe you're not always, you do. Yeah. I totally understand and get it as well. And we're just trying to encourage people to think, okay, can you talk to your healthcare provider or find the support to kind of get, you know, to help you. One thing we are developing is a patient information thing for menopause and cannabis based on our study results. So hopefully
amazing.
We'll have more information and working like with the Canadian Menopause Society and, you know, other organizations to kind of get that.
We'll always volunteer
out,
if you need us.
Yeah.
And we can also get a nice crew around in the GTA for sure.
Yes.
That will
We would love that. Love it.
This conversation has been really informative and we so appreciate you taking the time to talk. I know I feel like we could talk about this forever. So whatever additional links or info you want to give us, we'll include in our notes and we'll share with our community. Where can people find you online to stay up to date with your latest research? And we'll include that as well.
Just through the University of Alberta, the Faculty of Pharmacy, we have our information on there, my contact information, as well as research. Our faculty usually does like updates on, especially for alumni, but also updates on research things. But we try to keep it up to date on our site. So that's a great place. Or if people have questions, I do have my email there. I did want to just do a shout out to support that I have at the University of Alberta. I just wanted to give a shout out to Women's and Children's Health Research Institute. I'm a member of the Institute and it's been so helpful having them and their support, as well as the Alberta Women's Health Foundation for supporting our research. It's just really important to have more work like this done and getting the word out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we totally agree. And on that same note, we also recommend that everybody follow WHC Canada on Instagram. Check out whcc.ca to stay informed as new research comes to light. They also have a newsletter you can subscribe to. Just scroll to the bottom of their webpage and subscribe.
Yeah. We'd also love it if you take a quick second to like, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen and subscribe so you don't miss the episodes when they drop. And share with anyone you think who would benefit from these important conversations, aka everyone you know.
This podcast was produced by Space Monkey inside the Soda Studio. The song you're listening to is called Name and Number off the debut album Unrequited by Roshan. Stream it now on Apple Music.